Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
The following radio show is a live recording of the I Survived Real Estate event on August 23rd, 2008. The event brought together realtors, auctioneers, investors, mortgage professionals, economists, data providers, and builders to discuss how we got here, how the respective industries are changing, and how we move forward and prosper together in 2008 and beyond. Proceeds from the event went to the Orange County affiliate of the Susan G. Komen for the Cure. The event would not have been possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: the San Diego Creative Investment Association and President Bill Tan, the Investors Workshops of Orange County and President Sean Watkins, MVT Productions, the audio-video master behind the spectacular live production, White House Catering, who provided superb cuisine and outstanding service for the live event, Fry Wiles, the web development, internet marketing, and creative design firm that created the event site iSurvive2008.com, Proxibid, the online auction platform that aired the entire event online nationwide live, the Nixon Library, Pechanga Resort and Casino, the Chicago Bulls, the Denver Nuggets, and the Cleveland Cavaliers. See iSurvive2008.com for pictures, video, and more details on this historic event, brought to you by the Norris Group.
Our first guest speaker tonight is Christopher Thornburg. Christopher Thornburg is a principal of Beacon Economics. Dr. Thornburg is an expert in the study of regional economies, real estate dynamics, labor markets, and business forecasting. He is one of the people that saw this coming early because he could see no sense to the numbers anymore, making sense for people being able to pay so much for homes. And it turns out he was very right. Prior to launching Beacon, he worked with the UCLA Anderson Forecast, where he regularly authored the outlooks for California. Christopher, glad to have you here.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. It's very nice to be here. For those of you who know, of course, I've been a bear for quite some time, and I'm here to talk a little bit about what's happening to this economy today. You know, you pick up the newspaper, read the news, it's all over the map, right? It's hard to tell what's going on. We know that, for example, unemployment in California is 7.3% at last month. That's higher than it was at the peak of the 2001 downturn. However, we had about a 1.7% growth rate in the second quarter of this year. Not too bad. Housing starts continue to plummet, but, you know, realistically, they can only go to zero, right? So, you know, I mean, we're not too far from that, and, you know, it's going to end at some point in time, right? So you know, things keep things in perspective, right? You know, we know the consumer seems to be tottering, auto sales are plummeting, but industrial production is doing okay, and exports are booming. So what's going on? Certainly interesting times we live in. There's no doubt about that. And, of course, the big question everybody has on their mind is, which way is the economy going? There's one view out there that, you know, we've seen the worst. Now it's behind us, and things are moving forward, the recovery. There's another view out there that says this isn't a recession, it's never going to be a recession, but we are going to kind of sort of bink along for a year or so. My former employers at UCLA see this view of the world. And then, of course, there's another view, which is that the worst is yet to come, the fact that this thing is going to actually get worse over the course of the next year or so. Now, I know this is going to be shocking, but I tend to be in that last camp, and I'm going to talk a little bit about why tonight. You know, it's funny. I'll tell you, a reporter asked me one time, they said, you know, eventually this is going to end. Because I always keep this in mind. As bad as things get, they will come to an end. Things will get up and running again. No matter how rough it is, the fundamentals of the U.S. economy, a great infrastructure, you know, hugely educated workforce, the best technology in the world. I mean, these are going to come back and they're going to pick the economy up and we're going to move forward again. Always don't lose sight of that long-run situation. But a reporter said to me, said, well, what are you going to do when things finally do hit bottom and start coming back? Are you actually going to be able to be a bull for once? And I went, well, I'm going to have to see a psychotherapist for a few months, but I may be able to do that, right? So let's talk about three things. I only have 10 minutes up here tonight. I want to talk about housing. I want to talk about the financial markets. And I want to talk about the rest of the economy. So let's talk about the housing market for a second. We know prices have come down quite a bit. But, of course, the thing that everybody's been seeing on the horizon is that sales have started to tick up. We're starting to see some liquidity in the market. Is the bottom near? Well, my answer is, unfortunately, no. Keep in mind that this situation we're in right now is not a liquidity crisis. It's not a problem with the mortgage markets. In fact, there's not enough money out there. It's not a problem, even so much with the home builders, that we have a massive excess supply, because we don't have a massive excess supply. We have some oversupply, but not a massive one. The biggest problem we've had in our housing markets over the course of the last few years is that prices went to levels that were just ridiculous. You know, in a classic case, this would be Los Angeles, and I have to go through this very quickly. In 1999, in Los Angeles, you could buy a house for $199,000. That was actually kind of expensive. If you looked at the money that people who own homes earn, and you asked how much would it cost them to buy that average house, turns out they would use 30 to 35% of their income. And that's expensive, but, you know, it's okay. It's a city. It's expensive. Fast forward to 2006. Now that same house in Los Angeles doesn't cost $200,000. It costs $577,000. Now, certainly incomes went up over that same period of time. But if you sit down and do the same calculation, you find out that that same average homeowner buying that same average home would have been using 70% of their income to buy that house. Well, that doesn't make any sense. The biggest problem we have in our housing markets, and what remains in our housing markets, of course, is prices. And prices have yet to fall. Now, of course, prices got that high because of the subprime mortgage market. And we know the chaos there. We don't have to go through it. But I do like a little irony. You know, do you remember the Greenspan's froth speech that came out a bunch of years ago? I don't see a bubble, but I see signs of froth. You know, the interesting thing he says is actually later on in that speech. This is a quote. This is right off the Fed website. Home price declines, were they to occur, likely would not have substantial macroeconomic implications. Why is that? It's because nationwide banking and widespread securitization of mortgages make it less likely that financial intermediation would be impaired. Well, of course, we understand now that the problem in our housing markets, the reason prices went up so high, is because, of course, all that crazy money that let people gamble on homes like never before. And now we're seeing the back end of that. We're seeing prices fall, and they continue to fall. In fact, the pace of falling right now is about 30% per year. Okay. And, you know, we have a lot of ways, long ways to go. Sure, we've seen an uptick in sales. There's no doubt about it. But that uptick in sales is not enough to absorb the amount of houses that are going onto the market right now. This is from the first quarter of this year. This is notices of default, data quick numbers, and I'm comparing it to sales. In San Bernardino County in the first quarter of this year, there were 11,000 notices of default. There was 4,000 sales, home sales. In other words, for every home that's being sold, there's another two that are going into foreclosure. Don't think this rise in liquidity is the bottom of the market. We have a pretty good ways to go. Now, overall, how far are prices going to fall? Well, by my models, it says something about 50% or so. From that measure, we're about two-thirds of the way there, maybe halfway there. It depends on what neighbor you happen to be living in, but still a little ways to go. Now, of course, this all tracks through to all these nasty financial losses we've been seeing in those markets because all this stuff is translating through to a tremendous amount of losses. We've seen all the mess. It's going to be over a trillion, probably a trillion and a half before it's all said and done. The banks at this point in time have declared about $400 billion. There's a long ways to go. There's no doubt about it. Fannie and Freddie are still hanging on. I can't figure out why. When you consider that Fannie and Freddie are overexposed to Arizona, Nevada, California, to Florida, why are they overexposed? Because they were trying to keep up. They're overexposed. These markets prices are plummeting. The kind of loss ratios they're going to be facing on any kind of foreclosed property, regardless of why it happens, is going to be enormous. And, of course, when you're leveraged 100 to 1 like Fannie and Freddie are, you don't survive. It's just that simple. And, of course, this big housing bill that just passed, well, that doesn't really help anybody. What are the big things in there? Well, they give local governments enough to buy some homes, sit down and do the calculations. All that money will allow California local governments to buy about 4,000 homes. So what? And, of course, you have some money that's bailing out Fannie and Freddie. That's going to be in there, basically going to be renationalized. And, of course, the third part of that process is basically allowing banks to refinance certain homeowners. And if they do that, they get mortgage insurance. But, of course, the only thing that is a bailout for the bank because they're going to pick out the worst mortgages and refinance those at 15% less and let Uncle Sam pick up the bill when the person actually does roll over and the loss ratio is 60%. So, again, not a lot of help. It's a big mess. The Fed has lent $140 billion to the banks at this point in time. And there's still a big mess. Now, one quiz for tonight. Over here on the right, a guy named Barry Bonds. Remember him? He's got a Homer record. Of course, over here on the left is Alan Greenspan, former secretary. The quote I just read you. What do these two guys have in common? Well, of course, the answer is they're both going to have their records marked with an asterisk. So, I didn't know if you knew this, but Einstein actually had another career. Before he did physics, you know, he did a little finance. Because physics is fun, and it's a great way to spend your, you know, declining years. But if you want to make some money, you have to do finance. That's where the bucks are. And he actually did some of the first subprime debt stuff. I don't know if you knew this. Now, the reason I bring this up is because, you know, housing, it's a couple, we're a couple years into this mess. In the financial markets, Bernanke's doing what he can. He's giving all the money in the Federal Reserve away to these banks to keep them liquid, which is important. So why are we going to have a recession? Well, you know, the real issue about the second quarter growth rate was not what happened, but what didn't happen. We had the single largest amount of money just dumped on American taxpayers. An enormous amount of cash put out there in terms of those rebate checks. In the second quarter, we should have seen an enormous increase in consumer spending, and we didn't. It grew at basically a tepid pace. In fact, if you sit down and do some modeling, you remove those big rebate checks, you know what? We didn't have consumer growth in the second quarter. We had consumer decline. Actually, things would have gone down but for those checks. Now, the reason this is all happening, of course, is because the real imbalance in the economy is the consumer. And don't forget this. Over the past 10 years or so, you've had two enormous asset bubbles, first in the stock market, then in the housing markets. And all that incredible increase in wealth has caused consumers to feel like, hey, I don't have to save anymore. And savings rates, that's over here on the right, that went from 8% to 0%. Well, here's the bad news. All that fake wealth is now leaving us. There is no more stock market wealth. There is no more fake housing wealth. You're seeing a dramatic decline in net wealth in the U.S., and all that debt Americans have racked up, well, that's very real. That's remaining. And we're going to end up in a situation where consumers are so burdened by debt and really have no assets to draw on that they have to start saving again. Now, this is good for the long run of the U.S. economy, but it's bad for the short run. And watch out for that. It's the consumer that matters. It's the consumer that's going to be driving the next part of this cycle. And, of course, we know what that means for the rest of the economy, and we know what it means for housing. So the key here, of course, is consumers are really going to start pulling back in Q3, Q4. It's going to have a big impact on the overall market. It's going to hit those commercial markets. Watch out, particularly for retail. And, of course, you have all the other recession-related problems. Banks normally feel the greatest stress after a recession is over. Think about that. It's a lagging situation. Well, think of all the stress banks are facing right now, and we haven't even got into the overall recession. So watch out there. Any good news? Come on, inflation, give me a break. Over here on the left, who was around the late 80s? 15%? That's inflation. So with that in mind, I'm going to wrap up right now. Oops, I got blanked off. Again, the big message is tonight, we're not through this. We're not through this yet. We got the consumer cycle to come. It's going to be a bad downturn, but keep your eye on the end game. Mid-2010, this economy gets up. It's going to run again at a very rapid pace. The whole key is getting from here to there. So watch out, and good luck to y'all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was very informative and very true. Our second speaker is Rick Sharga. He's the Vice President of Marketing with RealtyTrack. Rick joined RealtyTrack in 2004, where he's responsible for building and maintaining the RealtyTrack brand, corporate positioning and messaging, public and investor relations, and marketing communications activities. All you have to do is turn on any newscast, read a newspaper, and Rick Sharga is going to have had something to say about the foreclosures. Mr. Sharga.
I wanted to thank Bruce for putting me on in front of the only entertaining economist in the country. And I got to tell you my only economist joke, and this was actually put out by another economist. It was Doug Duncan when he was the chief economist at the Mortgage Bankers Association. And he said the reason that God created economists was so that weathermen would look accurate. Having said that, I'm afraid that we pretty much agree with everything you just heard. And what I'm going to talk to you about really in rapid-fire progression is one of the core drivers of all the problems that Chris was just talking about, which is the ridiculous number of foreclosures that we're seeing in the marketplace and somewhat what's causing them. And really, we're looking at a perfect storm here. So I have to thank the cartoonist whose copyrighted information I'm borrowing temporarily to put up on the screen. For showing what some of this is all about. So we're going to talk a little bit about some of those foreclosures, assuming this clicker works, what it's looked like over the last couple of years, what the implications are for the housing market, the outlook for 2009 and beyond. We're going to do all that as close to 10 minutes as we can. If you have turned on, as Bruce said, virtually any news media, whether broadcast, TV, radio, online, print, they're covering this story. In fact, we're hosting a panel at a conference next month on the mind of the media, because the industry is curious why the press is all of a sudden interested in this foreclosure thing. Like it's a secret they shouldn't be talking about. RealtyTrack's monthly foreclosure report was covered by itself in over 17,000 different press stories in the first half of the year. We're getting 3.5 million unique visitors to our website every month. Interest in foreclosures is unprecedented from a consumer basis. And as my boss, our CEO, Jim Sicascio, is fond of saying, we were one of the first people to really sort of democratize this information and make it available to people. So a lot of people that don't like the fact that this is out there blame it on us. I'd like to blame it on somebody else. And if you really think about what got us into this, imagine that you were looking for a loan a few years ago, talking to your banker, and he said something like, as an alternative to the 30-year traditional mortgage, we have an interest-only mortgage, balloon mortgage, reverse mortgage, upside-down mortgage, inside-out mortgage, loop-de-loop mortgage, and the spinning double-axle mortgage with a triple Lutz. This is not normal banker behavior, as we're taught in school. And what drove some of this behavior is an unprecedented integration of events that happened all at the same time. In the first place, we had Fed policy, which was alluded to a little earlier. Money suddenly became free. And if you remember, if you lived through the dot-com meltdown like I did at the end of the 90s and watched your 401k become a 200.5k, people were looking for another place to put their money. The Fed was trying to do something to stimulate the economy. 9/11 hit. That didn't help matters either. And so suddenly money became free. Suddenly, if you could fog a mirror, you could get a loan. In fact, if you knew somebody who could fog a mirror, you could get a loan. So the free money policy drove prices down, or the rates down, and drove artificially home prices up. What I have to explain to the media over and over again is this scenario played out in Riverside, in San Bernardino, in Stockton, in Florida, in Arizona. It was people who shouldn't have been qualified to buy a loan, to get a loan, buying an overvalued house that they really couldn't afford with a risky, toxic loan product. And that turned into a soup that made them all very, very sick. Wall Street securitized these loans, which looked like a good idea at the time, except they had this voracious appetite for very exotic loan products. And I actually heard this anecdote at another conference where somebody said, I was talking to the guy at Bear Stearns, first mistake, I was talking to the guy at Bear Stearns, and he said, how come you can't get us a higher volume of these loans? He said, well, it takes us about 30 days to do due diligence. We have to find out they are who they say they are, that they actually have a job, they actually have assets, they can actually afford the loan. And he said, well, what's the fallout rate? How many people fail the test? He said, about 3%. He said, well, forget about the due diligence. If it's only 3%, we can write that off. It sounds like a ridiculous story, but it's so ridiculous, I actually believe it. I believe that's actually the kind of thing that went on in the industry. And you're watching these people who are always the smartest kids in the room suddenly running for cover on Wall Street. But they shifted the risk from the banks to some poor guy who was managing the retirement funds for the Grape Growers Union in Tuscany, who suddenly owns 20% of your mortgage. And if you need to do that loan modification, he has to approve it. He owns the risk. He makes that loan that much more difficult to adjust and modify. And we had two fundamental changes in behavior that never should have happened at the same time, but they did. One fundamental change was the banker's mindset shifted from, we're going to make you a loan and we're going to hold that loan, to we're going to make you a loan and we're going to sell it to Wall Street. So it went from buy to hold to buy to distribute. I'm moving the risk from my place to your place. And while that was happening, the consumer mindset changed. The house was no longer a place to park your car. It was a place to park your money for a little while till you could flip it, because there was a TV show called Flip This House. And if those idiots could do it, I could certainly do it. So what has all this inherent and ridiculous behavior led to? Probably the largest confluence of foreclosure activity in the history of the country, by anybody's numbers. And what we're looking at is the light blue bar is the total number of foreclosure filings. We capture foreclosure data from 2,200 counties across the country. All three types of filings, the initial notices, the notice of sale, and the REOs, the repossessions. If you look at the range, the range of growth in those filings, we went from about 1.2 million in 2006 to over 2.3 million in 2007. It was a 75% increase. If you look at the number of individual U.S. households that received a foreclosure notice during that period of time, we went from a little over 700,000 to almost 1.3 million. 1.3 million U.S. households received at least one foreclosure notice last year, a 79% increase. In California, the numbers were even goofier. We had filings grow by 338% in 1 year, and the number of households grew by 285%. Ridiculous numbers. And the really good news is, if you like charts that go up, this year's numbers are going to keep going. This is an eye chart. I'd like you all to identify your county by pointing. If there were ever a date, if there were ever a debate as to what kind of state California was, this has clearly become a red state. So the areas with the red and the pink are areas that have a higher than average incidence of foreclosure activity. The areas with blue have a lower than average incidence. We figured out, by the way, that there are purple states. If we took the top 10 states in terms of foreclosure activity and called them purple, whoever's running for president could win the election with about another 70 electoral votes. The top 10 states in terms of foreclosure activity. So what you're seeing is a confluence of foreclosure activity in areas like California, like Arizona, like Nevada, all for the same reasons we've talked about. Overvalued houses, risky financing. If you look at places like Michigan and Ohio, God bless them, they're having foreclosures for old-fashioned American reasons. The economies stink. But if you look at the areas with the highest numbers of foreclosures, California has it hands down. Seven of the top 12 markets in the country in terms of foreclosure activity are in California. In Stockton, in the second quarter, one in every 25 households received a foreclosure notice. One in 25. Look around this room. If there are, I don't know, 400 of us here, how many people would have gotten a foreclosure notice based on those numbers? So very, very high incidence. In 07, we saw the first time in years that the number of foreclosure properties sold actually increased higher than the number of new homes sold. That number is going to go up this year to at least 25%. Not the 80% you read about in the press, but the numbers are definitely going in the wrong direction from an overall economy standpoint. So I got to notice I have to keep moving really quickly. So some of these charts are hard to read, but very self-evident. The bars on the bottom are the number of foreclosure properties that we're dealing with. The line on the top in this case is inventory. And as you can see, the number of foreclosure properties going up, the number of bank-owned homes goes up, the inventory numbers build. So the inventory you're seeing is going to be inflated dramatically by the number of bank repossessions. What's that doing in terms of new home starts? Well, no big surprise here. This is one of those glaring moments of duh. As the inventory numbers go up, new home starts go down. Foreclosure activity is driving that, so we're seeing a direct correlation. If you take a look at existing home sales, what we're hoping we would see is as home prices go down, the inventory builds up, you're going to see more of those homes sold that are on the market. We're not seeing that yet. Those numbers continue to go down, and a large number of those properties are the bank homes. A lot of opportunities for investors, but tough sledding for the rest of us. I know Chris looked at the Case-Shiller numbers too. If you take a look at August of 07, which before this quarter was our prime period for foreclosure activity, that's when the market started to go down. So two more slides, then we'll be done. They gave me I'm done here kind of message. In California, you can see that when we hit that peak in August is when the value started to plummet. And this is the state hardest hit, in at least in our analysis, and the correlation between foreclosure activity and prices is clear. We see at least 3 million foreclosure filings this year on over 2 million U.S. households. That number is not going to get better. We're probably going to revise that projection. There are $100 billion of subprime adjustable loans that are resetting between June and the end of this year. Those are the ones that started this whole mess. So we're going to see historically high levels of foreclosure activity at the end of this year. 32 consecutive months of growth year over year in terms of foreclosure activity. That's not changing. May is the highest month we've ever recorded. July is the second highest. The REO inventory is going to be over 1 million homes by the end of this year. And Alt-A and option arms are going to be the next wave, and they're going to start in 09 and have a huge period of resets in 2010. So I hope you've enjoyed that glimpse of the future. And it does present a lot of opportunities for people who are investing, and I wish you all the best of luck.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.